From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast.
Carnegie Tsinghua Center, where I focused on China's climate and energy policy. I'll be your host. Today, we are delighted to welcome Dr. Yang Fuqiang, a senior climate advisor of the Natural Resource Defense Council China program. Dr. Yang has been involved in energy and environment issues for more than three decades. Prior to that, he served as the director of the Global Climate Solutions for WWF International and as the country representative of the Energy Foundation China program. He received his bachelor degrees in physics from China's Jilin University in 1977 and his PhD in industrial engineering from the West Virginia University in 1991. He's now based in Beijing. Today, we will be speaking with Dr. Yang about a number of timely environment issues that makes up the core of Dr. Yang's work. We'll be speaking about China's energy transition, especially the reduction of coke demand in the last 3 years, rebuilding consensus on the carbon market, and China's commitment on climate change. Dr. Yang, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Glad to be here.
As we know, China has made great efforts to reduce its coal demand in the last few years. According to a recent report from the New York Times earlier this year, Chinese coal consumption dropped 3.7% in 2015, the second year in a row. However, the road to energy transition is always very hard and complicated because of China's gigantic energy systems and traditional patterns of energy consumption. In your opinion, we would like to hear what is the biggest challenges for China during this process, and how could China overcome those problems without causing too much economic difficulties to the old system?
Coal is the king in China energy consumption, but China coal consumption reached the peak in 2013, and that is almost is account 53% of total energy, total coal consumption in the world. So you can imagine the coal consumption create many problems, particularly for air pollution, the water pollution, and also carbon emissions. And so we count coal consumption account 3.7% of total GDP losses in 2012. So that is big challenge for China. Also, the public concern is about the health and also protect the children for the future. So we understand the coal consumption drop in 2014 and also a continued drop in 2015. And this year we expect will continue drop, but the drop will be a slow down little bit. And they have many challenges. And first challenge is they have a very heavy resistance from industry and also from coal consumption intensive industry like iron, steel, cement, building material, and coal-fired power plant. And so that is why we have to work with together and try to convince them. And so the coal consumption is too much. So China have to have energy transition and use more clean energy. And now that is create more green jobs. And we have calculated if we use the more renewable energy efficiency and reduce the coal consumption overall, and we can create more green jobs. And second, the challenge is the implementation of the government regulation and policy on the coal cap. And now we promote coal cap in China, but we understand Chinese government have established the many regulation and policies, but the question is the implementation. For instance, recent days, you can see a heavy smog in China in many provinces. And the question is the local government still not pay attention to oversee or implement regulation imposed fine for these polluters. And so that is why the air pollution is so bad. And third challenge is that we have to use the market mechanism, particularly we call the a green finance. If we can reduce the investment in the coal consumption and other coal-intensive industry, and so we also can reduce the coal consumption. And fourth is also promote a public awareness. We know the air quality is a concern, the public concern very much. So this is a bottom up and is quite important. So we have to combine the top down, the government policy regulation, and also the bottom up public awareness, and push the government to adopt a more effective policy and also implementation effectively.
Thank you, Dr. Yang. You have laid out quite a few areas that we can work together and also to implement regulations and working with government to help reducing the carbon emissions. So in general, are you optimistic about that China's prospect of coal consumption? Do you think that it's going to continue to decline, or maybe the recent decline is only a bump of the trajectory because we have seen so much investment recently happened in the coal-fired power plants and people are worried about maybe there is another stimulus package to the energy systems. How can we ensure the energy transition towards a low carbon technology such as renewable and natural gas, maybe more of that in the energy system, could it be sustained in the future?
In the long term, coal reduction, this is for sure. And we have carried out some studies about what is a scenario in the long term. So as I said before, we have many drivers and push the coal reduction. And of course, you understand is a Paris Agreement now is become effective, and also in the negotiation, and we'd like to promote a high ambitious target by 2020. Also implement the Paris Agreement. So this is give a pressure to the on the coal. So that is these things is certain. Mm. And the question, of course, sometimes will be increased a little bit, but long run, and this decline that is cannot be reversed. And so I understand in the, particularly in the carbon emission in the long run actually is play a key role. In the short run, the air quality, water issues, and other is also force the coal consumption down.
So we have seen the government is committed, and also there is a huge demand from the general public to reduce the coal consumption. But we also understood that this is, as you point out rightly, this is not going to be something easy, and there is very strong vested interest group in China to fighting, and there will be also implications on employment, on local government. So, but the good thing is that we know this is going to happen, and we are prepared to take calls and help that smooth that transition. Let's now look at the other side of the Pacific. The U.S. now finds itself with a new presidential administration for the first time in 8 years. While a significant amount of uncertainty still remains and around the future policies, in your opinion, how has the election impacted U.S.-China relations on the climate policies? We have noticed that before there has been a lot of progress being made between President Obama and President Xi Jinping in building up foundations of international negotiation on climate change, and also both countries reached a consensus on energy transition. So in your opinion, would this be carried forward in the new administration, and how this too would be affect two countries' cooperation in the future?
They have some uncertainties in this presidency election in the U.S. And we also look back in the Copenhagen, and you can see the China Sino-U.S. have a good cooperation in on the climate change issues, and both government have issued a joint agreement is we'll do something in Copenhagen, and actually is they did this announcement before the Copenhagen, and so that's why in Copenhagen you can see, even though they cannot reach the very good result, but however these two countries is still push the Copenhagen and have a make agreement, and U.S. and China also have do a good job in the Copenhagen. But that is say after Copenhagen, China, U.S. The both sides work together very closely and have jointly and have announced many agreements, and this particularly in the Paris a negotiation in the COP21, and you know, U.S. and China also before and after the Paris Agreement, so that is help the get signed this agreement in the G20, and Sino and U.S. also have a signed agreement to further to implement Paris Agreement. So I think is these two countries. One is most emitters in a developing country, and one is largest emitters in a developing country. And these two countries work together, and so that is make international agreement is much easier. And also, these two countries can demonstrate, and both developed country and developing country, actually they can work together. And for instance, in the technology transfer and in the many in the area like energy efficiency, renewable, and also in the city, work in the city and bottom up and to reduce the CO2 emissions. And for this election, and we are concerned is can we I ask myself, do you think this good momentum can still move forward? And that is a big remark. And so we hopefully, and Sino-US a cooperation on the climate change will still move forward.
Thank you. I think as you discussed, the US and China has demonstrated a joint leadership in both developed country and developing countries in the last few years. That has laid the foundation of success in Paris Agreement, and also both countries have achieved a lot in terms of the progress in their own policy to tackle the climate change. Under the Paris Agreement, pricing carbon is regarded as a high priority in mitigating the climate change through the market force. The carbon market has been piloted in China for a few years, and you have already commented them before in a few years back, talking about the prerequisites for a successful carbon market to be running. In your opinion, you said that China could probably not get a matured carbon market by 2020, but we knew that Chinese government is very ambitious and they want to, and they announced that they're going to establish a national market, carbon market in China by the end of 2017, although that is only a start of the national market. But still, this is quite remarkable because this is going to be the largest carbon market in the world, and it's also very significant because this is the first one in the developing countries, and that could actually be twice of the size of the European Union's EU trading market scheme, EU carbon trading schemes, and larger than all the other existing carbon market combined. So do you think this is going to be easy for Chinese government to operate? What could be the biggest barriers, and what can we hope for this carbon market to bring to China?
Of course, this is not easy things to accomplish, but we believe and Chinese government have this kind of momentum. They like to adopt the market-based mechanism, ETS, carbon market trade in China, because we know Chinese the government are very strong in every issues, but sometimes the result is not like people expected. And so we do believe the market-based tools usually is a more effective and carbon market. China have tried 7 pilot cities and have get a good experience and lessons. And so Chinese government announced this kind ETS market, but it's also written in the Sino-US agreement, joint announcement. And so now Chinese government is pushed very hard move towards to this target. And now have a first step is have 8 sectors involved in these markets, and so enterprises, major enterprises, is also have a get quota for the CO2 emissions. So the total emission sum up is about 3 billion to 5 billion ton of the CO2 emission. Of course, this this is the biggest carbon market in China.
In the world as well.
Yeah, based on my observation, that is not easy task, because first you have to understand the data and the information is accurate, and but in some way, Chinese data and information are not so reliable, and so that is a heavy task for the third party, for the enterprises, and for the government. Have a very dig to the deeply and to find out this data is reliable or accurate or not. And for these enterprises, they are involved in this market. And second is we have to have a very strong regulatory body to oversee this carbon market. And so that is quite important. And because we are not like to say government actually is a play a good play a role to oversee the carbon market. We have to have a regulatory body, but so far we don't have a strong regulatory body in here. So we have to find anyway anybody set up anybody in the local to see. And third is we have to have a third party involved in to check all this information and to see at least kind of a report or this carbon savings or the sell and buyer, and so that is accurate, and so keep the market can move without move the price have a interference something from outside. And so that is not easy. And so we have another kind of complementary policy options, and that is a carbon tax. And so we also discuss when the carbon tax can play any role in the to reduce the CO2 emission. By 2020, I think the carbon market will be established, will test, and will demonstrate the carbon market can work in China or not. And so far, they have many uncertainty, and we have to work very carefully, but we are very confident it means if they have a if we can work together with the enterprises, with NGO, with government, with other international experience and national the consultatory bodies, and so I think we will see in the next few years, and we see what is going on in the carbon market.
Yeah. I think we agree that this is going to be a very challenging task for the Chinese government to have this carbon market up and running by 2017. As you just correctly mentioned, we need robust data, we need good capacity to do the verification of the emissions, we also need a regulatory body that is independent enough and capable enough to oversee all these transactions. And maybe, as you just suggested, a combination or complementary systems together with the carbon tax, so carbon trading, carbon tax could work together in some areas and help China to achieve the goals. But in general, I think you are very optimistic about these systems in China. You think this is going to deliver huge carbon emission reduction benefits to China?
Yeah, I'm positive, and of course they have many debates and arguments, but for myself, my experience tell me at the beginning you have to be confident and to do that. If you don't you don't trust yourself, how can you make this happen?
Thank you. And we also have to leave some space for them to be mistaken, for mistakes and then correct them. Let's move to the last topics. And we know that it's just about a year. It's nearly a year since the agreement made in Paris. Now the delegations of different countries are gathering again in Marrakech, Morocco, in Africa, to looking for implementing this agreement and to set up the regulatory bodies and institutions to help that task. I think we would like to know that, in your opinion, what is the task that the Chinese government is expecting from this meetings in Marrakech, and how do you think this is going to continue to help China in energy transition and also in the battle tackling climate change?
Yeah, in Marrakech, I think it first is we have to discuss how to implementation of the Paris Agreement, and they have a many working group, and they have to get a very detailed because the agreement is too general, and some somewhere we still have a go to detail and make this works. So we still have a couple years to do so. For instance, if the every parties have provide their INDC, and now it's become NDC because they submit to the to the UNFCCC, and so now become NDC. So we have to review and see they have something inside we can do better about the improvement for the NDC. And also in the Paris agreement, and for instance, for the stock taken in the 2023-2028, and so how can we do it? Is which party review, and that's how can we work together? Is a country and a review country, so that is not easy. So they have many many detail. We have to discuss make a Paris Agreement can be implemented, and so that is the first. Is every a working group have to work together. And second is some important issue we have not discussed in the Paris. For instance, developed country will support developing country in the capacity building, the technology transfer, also the
financing
issues. But this have not get solution yet. And so we have to start to discuss, and we know before the 2020, and we have $100 billion the dollars, and developed country will support developing country to do the mitigation, adaptation, capacity building, or etc. But we don't have numbers for the Paris Agreement yet. Even though they say by the 2022 we have to set up this number, but if we get there, of course we understand this is not easy to get there. So we have to, this is a big, a negotiation and task. And third is when we're talking about the Paris Agreement, don't forget we have to have a set up is a target by 2020. That is set by the couple years ago for China, for instance. And we have 40 to 45 carbon intensity targets. So by 2018, what we can do about it? Can we make this more aggressive target? Will increase the target or not? So this also we'll discuss on this. And so I think is so they have a major issues is still in the air. And so we have to make this happen. And we also understand the devil in the detail. So we have to make, everything is set, agreed is set up.
Thank you. I think finance is always the hottest topic, right? We never have the climate conference. The country is always arguing about who should pay whom and how much and whether the money will be delivered to the developing countries.
Yeah, for instance, in Copenhagen, we have said is 2020 is about 100 billion. But unfortunately, in Paris, we didn't discuss what is the target for the financial support, right, by 2030. So we will use these couple years and hopefully by 2022 we can get agreement how many money is available for the developing country.
For our audience information, the INDC mentioned earlier stand for the Intended National Determined Commitment, and after the Paris Agreement was signed and ratified by the countries, then becomes the National Determined Commitment. And we knew that in one of the major elements of China's INDC or NDC today is that China wants to peak the carbon emissions by 2030. And given what you just described, then carbon consumption is already declining in China. And also you and your colleagues have helped a lot to facilitate the energy transition in China. Are you optimistic that China is going to achieve the 2030 carbon peaking goal, or China is still, or do you think China is already on track of that?
That's for sure. I think China can reach the these kind of commitments, and the CO2 emission will reach the peak around 2030 or earlier. Because first is that as I said before, the coal consumption reduction is a very strongly indicate, and China can do the better. Because the coal consumption reached the peak by 2013. So that means for others, oil and natural gas, all these fossil fuel energy will reach the peak. And based on our study, for the oil, probably will reach the peak by before 2025. And also earlier, like natural gas will reach the peak by 2040. And so they in the expert community, and we have most people believe and China probably can reach the CO2 emission peak by 2025, and even our study will be earlier.
5 years or
even more. And of course this is not easy, we have to have a more ambitious and effective policy and regulation come out. And also is said we have to see a more city like to join we call the CO2 peak earlier. We call
early peak cities.
Early peak cities called coalition. And so that's a hope for more mayors can join this coalition to make this happen. And also like enterprises, they understand if they can reduce the CO2, reduce the coal consumption or other fossil fuels, and they use more clean energy like renewables. And you understand China the renewable develop so fast, and the cost is so cheap. And so the target for renewable and become more aggressive, more ambitious, because for the Chinese central government, they always change their target. After a couple of years. So I think that is a positive line. And so I think in this case, if China can reach the CO2 emission earlier, and we hope Chinese government can play the leadership in the climate change. So that's also give encouragement for the developing countries, and they think they can do more.
So it's not only just the Chinese government, but also the local government, municipal government, and the enterprises are all playing a role in this transition, and you're very optimistic. And of course, you and the NGO communities are also one major part of that transition as well. So Dr. Yang, thank you very much for your time, and we wish you the best luck as you continue to work in these issues. Thank you very much for spending time with us today. And that's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our website and to see the work of all our scholars and the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time.
Thank you very much.